And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
And I'm Justin Schultz.
And Justin is a first-timer to the show. And Justin, welcome aboard.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, you know, it's great to have you on. At one point, we want to try to get everybody on. But, hey, you know, we'll do it one at a time. So, whatever works. You know, the Brewers, they've been doing pretty decent so far in spring training. They like to be a little bit better, you know, sitting at 5-6. But nobody really takes spring training that seriously. It's just more or less watching the prospects. And, you know, more people this year especially are focusing on the World Baseball Classic. And with that, you know, the Brewers had, I believe, what was it, 14 players, I want to say?
Yeah, I believe so.
Well, 14 players on the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, some of them have been not having to get out of it. Jeff Bianchi is the latest one who had to pull out for Team Italy due to a groin injury. And so, Justin, really, what does this say about Jeff Bianchi going forward for 2013? Because we knew that him going to the World Baseball Classic wasn't the greatest thing in the world because he still had a lot to prove as a utility player, you know, against guys like Taylor Green. So what does this say for Bianchi?
Yeah, well, first of all, I never was a fan of him playing in the WBC, especially when he was trying to earn a roster spot. But for him going forward, I think this is going to be a good move for him not playing. But I heard they're trying him out in the outfield now because obviously shortstop is going to be taken up with Gene Segura. And now they have Alex Gonzalez backing him up, who just hit a home run today in spring training, by the way. So he's got to either learn how to play the outfield or try to back up second base. But I don't really know what's going to go on with him. He's in a tough spot.
You know, a lot of people think with first base being so void for right now, there's a combination of Taylor Green that could go there, Jeff Bianchi, even Alex Gonzalez to some degree, or sign somebody else, which I don't think they're going to sign an outside person at this point. But, you know, I don't know if I really see Bianchi really at first base for the time being. I think that's going to go more to Taylor Green because Taylor Green's a versatile first to third. But, you know, I think that Bianchi, he has a clear shot to impress, but you know, unlike Gene Segura, who really was thrust into that role, Bianchi's gonna have to be a victim of circumstance, kind of like what Matt Gamble was once Prince Fuder left, and unfortunately for Gamble, it's never worked out. But you know, I don't want to see Bianchi go through that same process that Gamble had to go through.
Yeah, me neither. But last year he did pretty decent in the limited role he was in. He only batted 198, but he showed some power numbers, and you know, he gave some cause for being on the roster this year.
Yeah, and versatility is really the key for guys like him, because, you know, the Brewers have, you know, and a lot of people got on Ricky Weeks' case last year about him not producing, and a lot of people thought that they should bench him for somebody else, but then again, are you going to bench him for, say, a Taylor Green or a Jeff Bianchi? And I just never really thought that was something people should do. You know, that the Brewers should do and listen to those critics, because, you know, Ricky Weeks gets paid the money to, you know, I think, like Colin thinks, he gets personally overpaid. I think it's $11 million here in last year for what he does, but I don't think they're going to bench him at any time. I don't think you're going to see Ron Manicure, Doug Melvin say, hey, you know, he needs to be, you know, on the bench and we're going to start somebody else. But, you know, the versatility he has, like you said, him going into the outfield now, that really helps as well, because if he does become a little bit better and the Brewers feel like they have room to work with, possibly they could open up a trade with him to get somebody else for him. But it's interesting to see how he'll play out this year.
Yeah, I see him. I don't see him like, I don't definitely don't see him as a center fielder backing up Carlos Gomez, but he can give maybe Ryan Braun an occasional day off and maybe Aoki an occasional day off as well.
Yeah, and all around, I mean, Bianchi, He's not going to obviously have the Miguel Cabrera type of numbers or the Ryan Braun type numbers, but I think he'll do a well enough job, and we'll see, you know, how he bounces back from this injury that he has if he plays any all in spring training. But, you know, I think going forward for him, especially into 2013, he's going to have to be stepping up a little bit with first base, especially being so shallow, because the Brewers don't have a definitive answer for that just yet.
Yeah, especially at first base, he needs to get some work in there. But if he can't play at all during spring training, I don't see how he can possibly make the roster anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's just in a tough spot.
You know, and going away from Bianchi for a little bit, you know, who else really has been impressing you so far in spring training?
Chris Davis has been really catching my eye. He's shown his power in the minors last year, and especially during spring training. He already has 3 home runs already, and he hit a moonshot yesterday. And they say that he only can play left field, and he's a defensive liability there. But if I was Davis, I would try my best to work out at first base and just try to be an option there for the Brewers going forward.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people don't give Chris Davis the credit that he deserves. Because a lot of people look at the fact that, you know, he's not a huge power hitter, but he's able to still, you know, put some decent numbers up on the board. You know, you look at last year when he was between AA and AAA. His slash line was .350, .451, .604. And that's in 82 games between all three of them. He gets into AAA, he bats .310. He's a good contact hitter, only had 4 home runs. But I feel like people think that everybody needs to be a Ryan Braun in the outfield. And I don't think that's necessarily true when it comes to Chris Davis.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people have said that he needs to shorten up his swing and that he has a lot of problems with the off-speed stuff versus righties. But so far in spring training, he hasn't had any problem. I mean, he just hit a curveball out of the park in spring, so it doesn't look like he's had any trouble with that.
No, and he's very patient at the plate. He has a very good, you know, understanding of really how to judge a ball. I mean, you look at last year in Nashville in AAA, he struck out 27 times, but he walked 20 of the times. So, you know, when you see a guy who has more patience at the plate, that's something that the Brewers really need on their team, because guys like Ricky Weeks, who were striking out a lot more than they had been, and you see that increasing, you have a guy like Chris Davis, and it's kind of refreshing almost to see somebody who's a little bit more patient at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, even Corey Hart strikes out a ton, and all the outfielders, aside from Aoki, all they do is basically strike out or hit home runs. And so Chris Davis would definitely be a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people aren't, you know, going to give him a lot of credit, because obviously you have Caleb Gindel, who's fighting for a spot. You have Logan Schaefer, who right now I believe is the backup to Carlos Gomez. And then you have Josh Prince, who's, you know, in the wings at some point. So you have to wonder where Davis fits in. And, you know, I think we might see him this year, possibly if he's a September call-up. But I think in 2014, he definitely has a real shot of getting onto the 25-man.
Yeah, I agree. But as long as Ryan Braun is in left field, he's going to have a hard time, like, becoming an everyday player. So he might become big trade bait as the trade deadline comes along, or even next year.
You know, it's interesting you bring up that, because the Brewers had that same scenario last year with trade bait, and, you know, Corey Hart was up for that. And I think a lot of the team actually were centered around trade bait rumors. So who do you think that the Brewers could try and possibly trade for Davis? Do you think it'd be starting pitching? Do you think it'd be relief?
It's definitely got to be a starting pitcher, especially if the young pitching this year doesn't go as planned. I mean, their main goal was this offseason was to sign a veteran starting pitcher, but they failed to do that. And I think they still need a veteran in that rotation to be a mentor to the young players.
Are there any pitchers in particular that have really impressed you so far in spring training?
I was really hoping Mark Rogers would do a good job, but he has had major command issues. But Hiram Burgos has done very well, in my opinion. Brewer Scout has even said that he has the potential to be a solid number 2 starter in the future.
Yeah, you know, he's done well so far in spring training, and Mike Fiers yesterday, who pitched really well, and that's the biggest question for the Brewers this year is really who's going to fit into this rotation, mix and matching. Obviously, 1 and 2. That's Giovanni Gallardo and Marco Estrada. They've already confirmed that. Then beyond that, it's kind of a battle royale for the rotation. And then you look beyond that. You know, if the guys don't pan out, you know, if the team doesn't re-sign Narvison, if the team wants to try to extend Giovanni Gallardo, you know, where are guys like, you know, Hiram Burgess and possibly Johnny Helwig and Ariel Pena going to fit into this team? Are they going to be spot starters? Because that's what a lot of people thought about Mark Rogers, is they didn't know last year what he was going to do. I believe he spot started 8 games, and a lot of people liked him in that role because he filled in for injuries, he filled in for slumps, and he did pretty well in that role.
As far as this year's rotation goes, I think Willy Peralta is a lock. And I think you've got to have Chris Narvison in there, because otherwise you don't have a left-handed starter. And I think even though his ERA in the past has been in the upper four, he just needs to be in there because of his left-handed presence.
Yeah, and Narvison, you know, he's not the most intimidating of pitchers, but he goes in there and he gets the job done. He'll give you six solid innings. He might give up two or three runs along the way, but he'll keep you in the game. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't see about Narvison. They just see the fact that he's had about a career four or so ERA, and they just think, well, you know, he's no good. But he is a lefty. He's one of the very few we have, aside from, I believe, Michael Gonzalez and Tom Guarzolani. And, you know, that's something that this rotation needs, because, yeah, we can look at the fact that Mike Fiers did really well and then did really awful, and that Marco Estrada did really well last year, or that Willy Peralta did really well in September, but none of them have pitched more than 1 year in the league. Narvison has. And that's why, you know, I agree with you there. I think he needs to be in there, not only because he's a lefty, but because he has that experience.
Yeah, and also, like you said, he brings a veteran experience, and I don't see him as in a bullpen role at all. Like, Tom Guarzolani and Michael Gonzalez, they have their left-handed presence in the bullpen, and they're much more suited for the bullpen. Tom Guarzolani used to be a starting pitcher, but he didn't fare so well, and then when the Nationals moved him to the bullpen, he did amazing, and so he's more suited for the bullpen, but I can't see Chris Narvison enjoying a bullpen role like Guarzolani did.
No, I think it, you know, with Narvison being around 30, I think he'll be 32 this year, around being that age, I just don't see him going back to relief at all. I think, you know, if the Brewers do part ways with him, he's going to be probably a two or three, depending on what team he goes to, that might need pitching. I know the Rockies probably need pitching. The Orioles can always use some pitching. Texas is always out for pitching as well. But as for right now, Narvison has to be a lock for this rotation. You know, it's interesting that you also bring up Peralta, because I've always been a big Willy Peralta fan. I thought, you know, going into this year, he's going to probably be the number five. But I liked what I saw out of him in September. I thought it was really impressive. And we disregard the inning I believe he had back in last April. You look at the fact that he is a starter. He is not a relief pitcher. Willy Peralta is a starter born and bred. And going forward, if Peralta can do what he did in September last year and bring it into this year, I don't obviously expect it to be every month that he's going to pitch that well, because that's just, you know, unrealistic, especially for someone being that young and having that, you know, getting used to how major league pressure is. I think that Peralta, he'll have his struggles, but overall, I think he's going to do really well this season.
I completely agree with you. I don't think he gets enough credit for his work he did with the Brewers in September of last year. I mean, I think he has the potential to be a top-tier pitcher. He needs to get his changeup down. Like, this, that can't just be a show pitch for him. He needs to get swings and misses on it. But other than that, his fastball is one of the best that I've seen. And you heard what Ryan Braun said, that he said that his stuff is very nasty, and he's one of the best pitchers he's seen. So if 2013 goes well for him, I think he could be eventually a number two pitcher behind Giovanni as the years go on.
Yeah, and, you know, depending on how Marco Estrada does, because, you know, I was impressed with what Marco Estrada did last year as well. You know, if he fares out well and Peralta fares out well, that's going to be a pretty good top three with Gallardo. Then you can just mix or match Peralta and Estrada. You know, that's going to be a pretty good top three, potentially, if that pans out.
Yeah, Marco Estrada is actually one of my sleepers for this fantasy draft that we're having on Sunday. I think he's going to come out of nowhere and just surprise people who don't know that much about the Brewers and around baseball. He's going to be a stud.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at his, you know, season last year, and a lot of people will be offset by the fact that he, for a long time, was 0-2 and didn't have a win. And, you know, people like that won't factor in the fact that his opponents were only hitting .234 against him. He didn't have a bad ERA. It ended up being .350. At one point, it was, you know, around the high twos, which is not bad at all. But, I'm sorry, that's spring training. But regardless, you know, I think Estrada did well enough last year that he proved himself to be a part of this rotation. Obviously, when we looked at Mike Fiers and how well he did, he just absolutely blew us away. And then, you know, August hits, and it was more or less about Mike Fiers and it became more about Marco Estrada. And a lot of people were opposed to the fact that Estrada was starting because they liked him better in relief. And I wasn't one of those people. You know, Colin and I have talked about this before, and I agree with Colin on this. I thought Marco Estrada was suited better as a starter, even when he was getting all this, you know, hate towards him about it.
Yeah, I must admit, when Estrada was first thrusted into the starting rotation, I was one of those people clamoring him to go back to the bullpen. I didn't think he was going to be a starter. But as far as 2012 went, he just needs to be a little more consistent, because last season he was either really dominant or he gave up like 4 home runs in 5 innings.
Yeah, that's been the problem. You know, obviously we looked at the bullpen last year. Home runs were the problem. But, you know, that's something that these young pitchers are going to have to figure out. You know, these guys are new to it. And that, you know, we saw it with examples from like Sean Markham last year, who was a ground ball pitcher, you know, by heart. You know, maybe they learned from that. Maybe they learned to be more ground ball pitchers. But overall, I don't think it's going to necessarily affect them that they're going to have to change their entire style of play.
Yeah, I agree. But I still think the Brewers should have re-signed Sean Markham, because I'm a big fan of Sean Markham. He did his job, and he had a mid-3.5 ERA. And yes, he was hurt for the last half of the season, but he still came through when it needed, and he was a veteran presence that they needed, and I'm kind of disappointed they didn't offer him a contract, especially since he was willing to come back.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Markham really wasn't anything that was necessarily something that the Brewers should have just batted an eye at and said, hey, we don't want you anymore. Because obviously they had enough money that they were considering talking to Zach Greinke again. So if they have that kind of money, you know, you probably pay $10 million for Sean Markham for maybe the next 2 years if you were to re-sign him, which really isn't all that bad. But then again, this isn't the same Sean Markham that did so well in Toronto. And, you know, this is a Sean Markham who transitioned to the NL. And he did sort of some of the same things that he did in Toronto, but overall, you know, the injuries really did a number on him. And then just from September on last year, really mid-August on, he just looked really bad. But I don't know if that really should characterize an impression on him. I feel like overall Sean Markham was somebody that the Brewers should have tried to keep, but at the right price. I felt if it went over, then maybe not, because, you know, like Doug Mulvin said, he was trying to go for a veteran arm, and obviously he didn't because of the whole, you know, 3-year contracts. But, you know, now we look back at that and think, and we're thinking, you know, re-signing Sean Markham wouldn't have been all that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't even have dialogue with him about contract after the season. Like, he just signed with the Mets for 1 year, $4 million. Like, we couldn't really sign Markham to that. That's petty change for the MLB.
Yeah, and I mean, the Brewers aren't the biggest of market teams, but then again, they're not very, you know, they're not the Houston Astros small. Where I think it's like $11 million for their entire payroll.
Thank God we're not the Astros.
Yeah. Well, you got to feel sorry for them being in the division they're in now.
Yeah, they're going to have even less of a chance than they did in the NL Central.
Yeah, I mean, you have Seattle who's really turned it around as well. So, I mean, yikes. But, I think going into this year, this is going to be a very interesting starting rotation. I'm not going to say it's going to be good. I'm not going to say it's going to be bad, because it's hard to base on 1 year of how everybody did. Obviously, we know what we can expect from Gallardo, and we know what we can expect from Narvison. But Estrada, Fiers, and Peralta, this is going to be huge for them, because the Brewers have a good offense. You know, obviously that clicked really well, you know, mid-July last year when they started to turn around and made a run for the NL wildcard. The bullpen is another thing that I don't know how it's going to hold up, because you have now Burke Badenhob, you have Tom Gorzolani, you have Michael Gonzalez. You have guys in here that weren't in here last year, haven't had that much team chemistry together. You have Gonzalez and Gorzolani who were in Washington together. But overall, this is an entirely new bullpen, an entirely new rotation. So, Justin, how do you think this is going to factor in with them all being A, new to each other, and B, some of them not having as much experience as other guys?
I think the starting rotation is just going to be a revolving door. I think Estrada, Giovanni, and Willy Peralta will stay in the rotation for the whole season unless, God forbid, an injury. But as far as Fiers and whoever's the fifth pitcher, hopefully Narson, I think they're going to be just a revolving door. I think that Tyler Thornburg could see some action, even though I think he has one more year in minor leagues that'll do him good. And I just think it's going to be a revolving door. And because no one, I don't think Fiers is the real deal. I thought he was the real deal for the first 3 months of the season when he just shut down everyone and had like a just under a 2.0 ERA. But then his last like six starts, he had about an 8 ERA. And I don't think he's the real deal. And I think Mark Rogers is eventually going to take his spot. So we'll see what happens.
You know, and Thornburg is a very interesting pitcher too, because he's very compared to Tim Lincecum, especially with his delivery. And, you know, I thought Thornburg obviously was very rushed up when he got up here because of the injuries to Sean Markham and just the rotation kind of being a mess last year. He kind of rushed up through AAA. So, yeah, obviously, like you said, another year or maybe half a season in AAA will do him some more good. But even then, I mean, Tyler Thornburg didn't do all that bad. You look at his first start, I believe it was against Toronto. He was doing really well, but I think in that start, Renick, he left him in a little too long. But, no, I like Thornburg somewhere in this rotation. I just don't know how exactly he fits in now.
Yeah, I think he needs more movement on his fastball, because last year when I watched him, his fastball was so straight, and he gave up 8 home runs in just 22 innings, which isn't good by any means.
No. And, you know, that's something that a lot of younger players are going to figure out that, hey, you know, I got to figure out how to work this. I mean, we even saw that happen with Axford last year. You know, he gave up a lot of home runs. It was just that one straight fastball down the middle. And we know Axford isn't that type of pitcher. We know he's a good closer. So, you know, it affects people in certain ways. I don't know if Axford was a mental thing, you know, for Tyler Thornburg, but just because he hasn't had that much experience against major leaguers. But this is going to be a very interesting pitching unit altogether. What are your opinions on John Axford for this year? Because obviously we saw a tale of two closers. We saw a really good one in 2011 and then an okay one that still ended up, I think, with 36 saves last year in 2012, but with a higher ERA than I think anybody wanted.
I have no doubt that John Axford will bounce back. I think it was just a mental thing. And plus, he went through a birth of his child, so he had that on his mind. And a lot of those blown saves were a result of just some bad luck, too, some bad hops and stuff. And his command, who has never really been an issue before last year, I think he's going to get that squared away. And I don't expect him to be as dominant as he was in 2011, but 40, 45 saves, I can see that easily.
Yeah, and I think what also factors into that is the fact that he's not going to be in this just really god-awful bullpen last year when you had Jose Veras come in and give up 4 runs, or you had Francisco Rodriguez come in and give up 4 runs, or Cameron Lowe, or Tim Dillard when he was still on the team. And, you know, he's not in that anymore. He has guys that have had success. Burke Badenhop in Tampa Bay, Gonzalez and Gorzani in Washington. Brian Kinsler's done pretty well. Jim Henderson did pretty well. And I think Jim Henderson really did not get enough credit for what he did, stepping in at the point that he did. And then you have guys like Ariel Pena, possibly Michael Olmstead, who I think when he comes up here is going to just be a one-man wrecking crew. And eventually Johnny Helwig. You know, these guys I think are going to mesh together really well because it's going to be new. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting for them because they haven't all pitched together.
So. Yeah, I think Olmstead is – everyone's on his bandwagon already. And I think if he makes a team, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. And plus, Axford has a supporting cast now. He doesn't have to do it all by himself. He won't have this weight on his shoulders he did last year. And plus, if things go south with him, Jim Henderson is a perfectly capable closer, as he proved in 2012. And you're right, he doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, and a lot of people thought because, you know, he came up as a 29- and 30-year-old prospect that he wasn't going to be that well. Because obviously, we have reservations about pitchers who are that old and have not touched the major leagues at all. Obviously, there's something wrong with their command or their control. But that wasn't the case for Henderson. And, you know, obviously, it was just really, you had to sift through the crap last year of the bullpen and just find out, okay, this part is a little less crappy than the other part. And it turned out that Henderson was actually kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, like the gold nugget, the holy grail in terms of bringing this bullpen back. Because every time you put in Francisco Rodriguez, I think everybody just shut off the TV.
Yeah, Jim Henderson was what the Brewers hoped Jose Veras would be, but we all know how that worked out. And now Jose Veras is the favorite to be the closer in Houston, so we all know how good he is.
Yeah. You know, and you look at guys like Jose Veras and Francisco Rodriguez, who have had experience before, obviously, in bullpens, in, you know, successful experience, especially Francisco Rodriguez, who I think is just a few saves shy of 300, or is around that mark somewhere, and then he goes to Milwaukee and just falls apart. So, I don't know if that's just a mental thing with pitchers, but it just seemed that when they all decided to just forget how to pitch, it had to be last season.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why the Brewers' bullpen suffered so much is because they didn't know how to recapture their magic of the 2011 postseason. Like, they had too much pressure on them, and they wanted to go out and strike every batter out and didn't worry about getting ground outs or fly balls. They just tried to do too much, and it didn't work out at all.
Yeah, and, you know, we can speculate up until, obviously, April 1st about how everybody's going to do, and we can just see, you know, here and now how they're doing in spring training. But, you know, a lot of people think the Brewers aren't going to get past fourth place. They think they're going to be stuck there. They think, you know, the Pirates will do better than them, which I don't doubt that the Pirates can do well, but I don't know if they're going to do better than the Brewers. Because if the Brewers can at least get the pitching to click somewhat, they'll be fine, because they have an insanely underrated offense. You know, you have, literally, if you're heart of the order is Corey Hart, Ryan Braun, Aramis Ramirez, you throw Jonathan Lucroy in there, and even Ricky Weeks when he's on fire, that is deadly.
Yeah, it is. They led the National League in home runs last year, and they were the best offense in the National League, and they definitely don't get enough credit.
You know, I think they said, I was watching MLB Network just a few days ago, and they were talking about the Brewers last year and how they were one of the best teams post-All-Star game. And you never heard anything about them. It was always about the Cardinals. It was always about, you know, other teams, the Dodgers. But it was never about the Brewers, who really made a huge run out of it last year. And, you know, obviously, pitching coming together helps a little bit. The bullpen decided, hey, let's start to pitch now. And, you know, Axford picked it up, got 15 saves in a row. But the offense is just so good.
Yeah, and plus, being a small market team, Milwaukee doesn't get a lot of airplay anyway. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, especially I think Gene Segura is going to pick it up this year. He's going to figure it out. I think he's going to impress a lot of people. I think the offense could even be better than it was in 2013. And I think Carlos Gomez is going to build on his powerful 2012. And I think he's going to hit close to 25 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Gomez is a very interesting character because he's been around the league before with the Mets and with the Twins. And he comes to the Milwaukee, and really, he obviously won the job very early last season over Niger Morgan for center field. And I think he can do pretty well. You know, 260, 270 hitter. Obviously not what Ryan Braun is, not what Nomura Chukwuoke is with contact, but Carlos Gomez is a good mesh of both of them.
And plus, he's in a contract year, so he's going to be playing as hard as he can to get a big contract, and I'm sure he'd want to stay with Milwaukee, and Milwaukee will have all eyes on him.
You know, and, you know, talking about contracts and signing people, the Brewers have been linked to Kyle Lohse for the longest time. Aaron Harang's name has been thrown around there a little bit. Justin, if you had to make a guess, if the Brewers were to sign one of these guys, would it be Lohse or would it be Aaron Harang?
If the Brewers were going to sign one of these guys, it's got to be Aaron Harang. He'll come at a much cheaper cost, and I don't think they want to pay Kyle Lohse what he's asking for or give up their 17th pick in the first round. And I'm not a fan of signing Lohse either, especially if he wants a three-year deal. That's just not a smart move for Milwaukee. And building your team, that's how you do it, through draft picks. And giving up a 17th overall pick, that's just not a smart move.
You know, and it's not that I'm necessarily opposed to signing Kyle Lohse. It's just, you look at his career. The past two seasons, he's had an ERA under 4. Ever since then, he hasn't. He's had an ERA completely over 4 every year. He hasn't found that much success. I mean, I believe he's had one other year, I think it was 2008, that it was under 4. You know, obviously, ERA isn't the only story here, But for someone to start picking up now, you have to wonder how many years do they honestly have left in the tank. If he has one, that's great, but if you sign him to a 3-year deal, then you're screwed for the next two. Aaron Harang, though, he's had, you know, a ton of experience in the NL Central. He pitched 9 years with the Reds. And, yeah, like you said, he will come at a cheaper price. He's not going to cost a draft pick to sign. But, you know, the Orioles have been really in on him as well. So do you think the Brewers will start to pick up the pace a little bit on trying to sign Aaron Harang?
I think they believe in their rotation as it is now, and they believe in their young starting pitching. Because I believe if they were going to sign a veteran starting pitcher in the offseason, they would have done it by now. But as far as Kyle Loesch goes, haven't the Brewers learned that signing former Cardinals is not a good idea? I mean, look at Jeff Suppan and Braden Looper. That definitely didn't work out. And so just stay away from Kyle Loesch, Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's just like, we already don't like the Cardinals as much as it is, you know, looking at 2011. And now they're trying to give us everybody that never panned out for us. You know, they're saying, oh, here, take him, and he never pans out, so.
It's just every player that goes to the Cardinals, even if they're below average, they seem just to do amazing.
Yeah, you know, who knows why that is. Maybe it's just, you know, we like to fuel the rivalry a little bit, but who knows honestly why that is. But, you know, Loesch, I believe he's 34. I just don't know if he's really worth a 3-year deal. Maybe a 2-year deal on another team, but I just don't know if I see him fitting into Milwaukee all that much. His name has obviously still been thrown around. And the Rangers just announced that they're not interested in signing him because he was also linked there as well. But, you know, aside from Milwaukee, do you see Kyle Loesch fitting in anywhere?
Honestly, I don't think he's going to sign until partway into the season. Spring training, there's about a little less than a month left of spring training before the season starts. And honestly, I thought he was going to go to Texas. That was my destination for him, but apparently they've said that they don't want him, but they've also said a lot of things before, and then they go off and do them. So I still think Kyle Loesch will go to the Texas Rangers, despite what they say. Or if a major injury happens, like, for example, if Johan Santana, who's battling injury right now, if he can't come back anytime soon, maybe the Mets will take a run at Kyle Loesch.
Yeah, and Loesch had also been linked to, I believe, who was it? I think it was the Mets that you said. Because I know the Mets were also throwing money around trying to sign Michael Bourne. But that obviously didn't pan out. But, you know, I don't know exactly where Loesch is going to go. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. But you look at teams around the league that don't need starting pitching. Dodgers, they have a plethora of starting pitching. That's why they're trying to get rid of Aaron Harang. You look at it, even in our division, Reds don't need him. Cardinals, they thought, you know, with Chris Carpenter going down, that Loesch would automatically go back there, but their GM said that they don't want to re-sign Kyle Loesch, which I find kind of interesting.
Yeah, me too. As soon as I heard that Chris Carpenter would be out for the year, I thought, oh, within the week, Kyle Loesch will be back, but apparently not. But I think an interesting team that could be in on Kyle Loesch is the Seattle Mariners. They're about to turn it around. They have a pretty good offense, and you add Kyle Loesch to it, that only makes the team better.
Yeah, with signing Kenji Morales and trading for, I believe, Michael Morris, you know, that really helps their offense. And pitching-wise, yeah, they traded Jason Vargas for Kenji Morales to the Angels. But, I mean, yeah, you throw Kyle Loesch in that rotation. You have a rotation, the top three of Felix Hernandez, Kyle Loesch, and Hisashi Iwakuma, and that's a pretty decent rotation right there. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think Seattle could be a sleeper team on Loesch, and they have such a young team as it is anyway. I don't think they're going to mind giving up a draft pick for him. Or a team that has, you know, a really good farm like Toronto, but I don't see Toronto signing him, especially with getting Johnson, Burley, and R.A. Dickey. But I think a team that's rich in the farm, possibly Seattle, you know, could go after him potentially.
Yeah, it seems like Kyle Loesch is just waiting and going to wait longer until he gets the deal he wants, and he could even be willing to sit out half the year. He's just waiting for an injury and then a desperate team calling him and willing to pay him what he wants.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's actually after, if he were to wait that long after the MLB draft, that he won't be worth a draft pick anymore. So that would make him very appealing to a lot of teams then, because they could ink him for, I don't know, maybe a 2-year, $15 million of that, you know, sort of deal. And at that point, do you think that if perhaps he will wait that long, do you think that the Brewers should try and go after him then?
Yes, if the Brewers didn't have to give up their 17th overall pick, I'd want Kyle Loesch on the Brewers. But since they do, I don't want him anywhere near the club. But if that pick was no longer existent, then sign him. But I still don't want him for a three-year deal. I don't want him until he's 37. I'd rather see him at a two-year deal.
Yeah, and, you know, Doug Mullen got a lot of criticism for that, for having the, you know, no three-year deals or more for it. And, you know, that's what turned off Ryan Dempster to come into Milwaukee, because he was almost a sure lock to come to the Brewers. And then that didn't happen, and he goes to Boston. So, I don't know necessarily if Doug Mullen's going to go with that approach anymore. He might, and I can't really fault him there, especially for guys who are in their mid-30s like Loesch. But, you know, if you can ink into a two-year deal or ink anybody, any veteran, maybe Aaron Harang, to it, then yeah, possibly. I could see that definitely happening.
Yeah, I think Ryan Dempster would have been a great addition to the team. He knows the NL Central. Yeah, he's a lot older than – he's pretty old, but he knows the NL Central, and he would have been a great mentor to these young pitchers that the Brewers have.
Yes, I definitely think that he would have helped overall, because you have that veteran presence. I mean, you can even say, for example, I guess you could get it from Chris Narvison, not quite as much, because Narvison hasn't had that many years. But you look at, like, Yovani Iorio, who's had a lot of success, and how well he's done. And, you know, he can try to mentor them all he can, but you get somebody else in that's had just as much success as Yovani Iorio has had, but in a longer pace, like Kyle Loesch.
Yeah, I think in the end, Milwaukee will regret not going after a veteran starting pitcher, and Doug Mullen will regret not wanting to sign a pitcher to a three-year deal.
Yep, and one more thing I want to add today to our podcast is we still have two more spots open for our fantasy league. You have to just tweet at Reviewing the Brew. It's actually Review NG the Brew on Twitter with the hashtag Let Me Play, and just say why you should be a part of our league. You know, we'd love to have you guys in. Like I said, we have two more spots left. It's going to be very competitive. Justin, what are your strategies for fantasy this year?
For fantasy, usually I go after hitters first and then pitchers. I think relief pitchers are completely overrated in fantasy baseball, but I've never finished first place in any league that I've ever been in, so maybe I'm completely wrong in that aspect.
You know, last time on the podcast, Kurt and Colin vehemently mocked me because I'm a very pitcher-heavy person, but, you know, I think it works out, and I think, you know, you go for somebody like I especially think relief-wise, if you go for like a Craig Kimbrell early on, I think that's going to help you out in the end, because a lot of people think you waste your pick on a relief guy, but hey, it's Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah, if you have one of the first three picks and you grab either Trout, Cabrera, or Braun, I think you have a huge step ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. The draft is Sunday. So be sure and try to get on Twitter, let us know that you're interested, and we'll see what we can do for you guys. So, Justin, thanks for being on today. Feel free to come on anytime. So
thanks for having me.
Yeah. And, next show should be in about 2 weeks again. And then after that, we can start the regular season. So it's almost here, guys. It's almost here.
Can't wait.
So thank you guys for listening.
See ya.